Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 111 of Unblocking Crypto. How great to see you again.
Good to see you, Jason.
I know it's not another week of all-time highs, but I think we're going to have to get to the point where it doesn't happen every single week. I will say that even though it's not an all-time high, what we are seeing is the predictions for what Bitcoin's going to be at the year end are increasing by a lot of people. So still a lot of excitement, and I'm sure there will be multiple pullbacks along the way over the next 12 to 18 months. But it is cool to see, I mean, Standard Chartered probably being the biggest one, saying that 100K Bitcoin by the end of the year is now going to go to 150K. Right. So,
yeah. I think I've seen anything. Samson Mao's like $1 million this year, maybe next year. Lots of crazy numbers like that. It's like 3 months before that, everybody was so bearish that you didn't hear any predictions that were crazy like that. So I think a couple of months of just like up only changed people's brains, and all they can think about is, oh, this thing's going to keep going up. And then they just start doing all this fake math to just, oh, all we need is $100 billion of inflows and then we can be there, and things like that. It's like, well, that's a lot. $100 billion of inflows is a lot. Like, I think the ETFs have brought in a little over 10, like less than 15, but more than 10 billion so far this year in net inflows. And, you know, if you just extrapolate things out, then you can get to some big numbers, but that's having no cool down periods. You know, like we're gonna have some corrections, and that means we're gonna have some times where we have net outflows. So in order to get high net inflows, you've got to go through the net outflows. So I think people just kind of forget about that stuff when they start to think a little crazy and start to think we could have $1 million Bitcoin this year. But I mean, I think my prediction for this year was between 88 and 138K. And I still think that's pretty reasonable. 88 seems real easy. 138 might be easy to beat, but you still have to have like pretty sustained money flowing in order to get up to that level. I mean, you're talking about when you're at $100,000 per Bitcoin, you need $45 million a day of inflows just to eat up the rewards from mining. So, you know, it's the ETFs are bringing in, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars per day when they're bringing in money. But, you know, yesterday was the first time we've seen outflows in a while, net outflows. And there can be plenty of those. So, yeah, you just kind of have to ride the ride, man.
Yeah, I think the new CEO of Binance was saying 80K by the end of the year. So it's definitely a little bit lower and seems very easy to do. But I think the big thing behind all of this is if you look at the average transaction size, at least from the ETFs, it's like $13,000. So pretty much this entire run here lately has been driven by retail. And most of the big investors, especially the ones that are going to buy ARK and everything else, they're still in their research phase. I mean, it's going to take them 3 to 6 months before they kind of turn on the spigot. And then I think when that happens, it comes. So is $1 million possible by the end of the year? Who knows? It would be awesome if it was, right? There's still a lot more people to get involved. And I think time will tell. It would be a really crazy ride for it to go to $1 million by the end of this year. But it's definitely interesting to think about.
Oh, it's always fun to think about what would I do if Bitcoin hit $1 million in, you know, in some reasonable or some short time frame. But yeah, as far as the ETFs go, you know, Bitwise keeps giving us these little peeks behind the curtain, and talk their CIO and some of the guys in their C-suite will come on to Twitter spaces and podcasts and things and talk about what going and visiting customers and what customers are saying, what these RIAs are saying, and how they'll allocate their clients' positions into Bitcoin. So, you know, I think that's about as helpful as anything to remain bullish, because, you know, they'll tell you like that they're going to visit two clients today you know, both of which are, say, a couple of billion dollars of assets under management. And then, you know, as they come into it, they'll let you know, yeah, one of them is allocating 3.5% of customer funds into the Bitcoin ETFs. And so it's like, okay, well, there's some RIAs are allocating whatever percentage into Bitcoin ETFs. And if some are doing it, you know how it works. It's like, okay, well, everybody else can't let their competition win. So everybody else has to kind of have a Bitcoin allocation as well. So that's, you know, that side of it is kind of fun to watch. I'm not sure about the kind of the, I don't know why anybody's selling into this. I don't get it. I don't understand the reason to sell right now. It just feels like we're just getting started. And if you sell now, there, you know, Bitcoin has those times where it goes up and just never comes back down. So, you know, selling in the 60s seems like you could be not buying back until it's in the 80s, you know? So I don't understand selling right now, but there's plenty of new people buying.
Yeah. What was interesting, some of the ETFs. So if you look at BlackRock and Fidelity, which are the top two Bitcoin spot ETFs right now, those two right now are in the top five ETFs for the year in money inflows, which is impressive, right? I mean, if you look at it, it's, I think BlackRock did like 12.5 billion, Fidelity did just under 7 billion, and the other three funds that are in there all have an average of 400 plus billion in assets under management, whereas Fidelity and, and BlackRock are what, 15 and 9 or something like that, right? So it's staggering to see how successful some of these spot Bitcoin ETFs have been so far, and it's still the beginning. I mean, I was watching somebody say that we're like 1% of where we're going to be from a Bitcoin perspective as far as adoption, right? I mean, there's so many more people out there that aren't even really touching Bitcoin right now. So it's, I mean, the sky is almost the limit, since there is no floor in terms of how low they're going to debase fiat currency too.
Yeah, I mean, that's, to me, the S-curve of adoption. You know, we're not approaching that vertical where things kind of skyrocket, take off, and people pick it up really quickly. So there's a lot of kindling to kind of sort of let this bull run hot. So until we pick it up, I'm still going to kind of maintain my position that there's tons of room for this thing to go.
Yeah, I think the ETFs last week, I think, passed over 100 billion assets under management worldwide, between all the different countries that are doing it. US seems to be the one that is definitely having the most traction, because I think Switzerland and Germany and Canada all had some net outflows last week. But it's still pretty promising. And even CoinShares finally closed the deal with Valkyrie that they were acquiring. So I think it was like 500 million in assets under management for the Valkyrie Bitcoin ETF. So it's a European company that's kind of expanding in the US to have more presence in that space too. So they announced that back in November, and it's finally closed about 4 months later. So positive news.
Yeah, there's a lot of positive news. It's hard to find the negative right now.
Yeah. El Salvador is back in the news. They have eliminated the income tax for money transferring into the country. So previously it was like 30%, and now they've brought it down to zero. So they have their little El Salvador passport path that you can bring money in and become a citizen of El Salvador. And now they're trying to eliminate the tax to bring more companies and more people into El Salvador to continue to grow out the Bitcoin community there.
Yeah. Bukele's been a little more active on Twitter lately, and it always helps when your Bitcoin stack is in profit. So it's easier to talk when your money's on the good side of things. But he seems like he's still doing some good stuff. I mean, people in El Salvador seem to be happy with him. Crime's down. Bitcoin's up. You know, he's doing some good things. I think Max Kaiser is talking a lot. You know, he's been helping El Salvador, and he keeps mentioning Qatar and Middle Eastern countries getting involved. So I think he's speaking to them as well, which, I mean, Max Kaiser is one of those guys that's not my style. Like, he's a little too bombastic and yells a lot and things like that. So, but if he's different when he talks to presidents of countries, then, I mean, he knows a ton about Bitcoin, and, you know, he's like, he got in real early. So he's kind of watched the whole thing evolve too.
So if El Salvador is having a lot of positive news, Nigeria seems to be one of the countries that's kind of going in the other direction. Nigeria actually had probably some of the largest adoption rate from their citizens in crypto, and they, as a government, are now blaming crypto as the reason for all their economic woes. So they had, right, and it was $1 billion in money leaving their economy, and they're blaming that on crypto and kind of singling out Binance. They told Binance they wanted to talk. A couple of the executives showed up, and they locked them in a pool building, and they're pretty much holding them ransom until the CEO comes and talks. And they haven't charged them with anything, so this is kind of a really weird situation, but it is. They've also announced that they are going to 5x the fees that they're going to charge any crypto company that wants to do business in Nigeria. So it's kind of a mess, right? But at the same time, you have some of the citizens there that are building products, and there's one, Machenkuka, I guess I'm probably totally mispronouncing it, but what he's doing is taking pretty much the old phones that we first used that weren't smartphones. I guess they're called feature phones now, and making it so that you can turn those into Bitcoin wallets and transact over an SMS network without having an internet connection. So, which is kind of opening the doors for a lot of the people over there to have access to using Bitcoin, and especially with kind of the craziness going on there. Well, I think one of the founder there, he said, the best thing that could happen for Bitcoin is for governments to ban it, like China has done in the past, because then that forces all these companies to create censorship-resistant ways of doing business. And that's kind of what he's in the process of doing. So even with the bad news, some good news is coming out of it too.
Yeah, I mean, that's when Bitcoin, to me, really shines, is when people need it. I think, like in the United States, it's not as though people have their backs against the wall and inflation's an acute problem. You know, I think that it's cooking people slowly here in the US, but in other countries, you know, it's like getting out of the local currency is so obvious that they have to do something. So, you know, whether it's stable coins or Bitcoin, you know, they've got to do something. And then you can really see the value in getting into Bitcoin. So to me, yeah, Nigeria is, they've always kind of been on the front end of things for the last decade or so of crypto adoption. And it's no surprise that the government finds somebody to blame or finds something to blame that isn't their fault, even though that they're the ones that are destroying the currency.
It's kind of similar in the US with Biden trying to tax all the Bitcoin miners, saying that they're the ones using all the energy. This is the problem.
So. Yeah, exactly. Like they ignore all the positives and just start tagging the coin miners with, you know, their environmental problem, and, you know, ignore the fact that they're plugged into the grid and they're choosing places with cheap energy, and, you know, they're providing a lot of benefits on grid stability and demand curtailment and things like that. But the government doesn't care, man. The government, the older I get, the more I'm just realize that the government's just trying to make headlines and see what sticks. They don't really don't care much about what the truth is. And so, you know, I think they're barking up the wrong tree right now with Bitcoin, because at this point, you know, you're kind of past like the little 0.5% adoption. You know, a lot of people have gotten into Bitcoin, and a lot of them are smart enough to understand how the power industry works. And there's enough people on the Bitcoin side telling the story about, you know, how the miners are helping the grid. I don't think that the people are going to buy it. I'm pretty optimistic about kind of Bitcoin getting over the hump when it comes to all of these kind of misguided negative narratives that come out from the government. I just don't think it's going to stick. And the only people that are going to buy it are people that haven't gone through any trouble to understand Bitcoin at all. If it already matches what they think, then they'll eat up that headline. But most people, especially if they've gotten into Bitcoin at all, know better. So I'm not super worried about it.
Yeah. So when you look at what's happening, a Polymarket, which is a place you can go bet on things like elections and things like that, there's like $100 million that's been bet on the next U.S. election. And right now, Trump is leading that pretty drastically compared to what all the other polls are saying. So, and the reason being is that crypto has become a bigger piece of the story. And right now, Trump's the most lenient on it. And not that most people trust either side is kind of what they're saying. But because of what Trump is saying and what Biden is doing, then crypto is almost becoming that new swing vote. And it's their own little niche group that you can kind of go after. And they're going to decide the election and in the upcoming election.
Yeah, I mean, if voting still matters, I guess that's you got to keep that in mind. So,
yeah, well, I guess that's true too. So we whole nother issue there, although there is, I keep hearing Cardano's talking to, I think, some actual states in the U.S. about doing a voting type protocol on a very low latency blockchain or something. So it still sounds like it's in the works, but maybe we could see where voting becomes, you can actually trust what's being happening on these voting systems.
But, I mean, that blockchain, like voting on a blockchain, is something that sort of makes sense as far as having like an immutable record of the way things went. So, people are having enough time believing that voting machines and mail-in voting is valid. If you threw in a whole new technology at them, I think they would assume that there would be some fraud. So that'd be a kind of a tough road. But yeah, I mean, at least it would make sense. You could go back onto the blockchain and see like when people voted, what they voted for, even though you could like assign numbers instead of names for different individuals. So I don't know. We'll see, man. I think they got to do something. They got to get people believing that their votes count again.
So sticking with the government theme, and I know we've talked about the SEC in the past, but the SEC kind of keeps losing some of their arguments with the courts. In Australia, their version of the SEC went after a company called Finder Wallet, which had a kind of an earn program that a lot of these other companies had. They decided to sunset it in like November of 2022. And then the following month, so they gave all their money back to everybody. Nobody lost anything. They got all their money, yada, yada, yada. Australia's SEC came in the next month and pretty much came after them and sued them and finally got taken care of in court. And what ended up happening is the Australian courts sided with Finder Wallet, not Australia's version of the SEC. So we got some more positive things happening from a crypto perspective in other parts of the world. And it's good to hear and see things like that actually happen.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like the courts have been on the side of crypto and Bitcoin on a pretty regular basis. So, that's good for me. It kind of gives me a little bit of confidence in the system. So I'll take it.
And I feel like we forgot to mention MicroStrategy in the ETF section because they're pretty much becoming a Bitcoin ETF. But more news. They just bought, 800 million last week. They're working on a new 500 to 600 million note again to buy more. And now even Coinbase is kind of following in their footsteps and planning to raise $1 billion to kind of go do the same thing. So they're starting a trend. I wonder if this continues and you see some other companies out there that aren't as Bitcoin heavy start to put more Bitcoin on their assets or their balance sheets, like MicroStrategy and Coinbase.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to work in a big way for MicroStrategy. And I, there's just not a lot of companies out there that have kind of the structure that MicroStrategy has, with Michael Saylor being, in with both feet and having a lot of authority on the direction of which the company moves. But you got to see what they're doing and understand like what Fidelity talks about, where it's like, well, if you have a 2% Bitcoin allocation and 98% cash, that's better than a lot of investing portfolios. And so to put in 2 to 5% of your cash into Bitcoin instead of just letting it sit there or put it into treasuries, that doesn't seem like a crazy move at this point. So I don't know why we don't see more and more businesses and public companies putting in a percentage of their cash into it. But we might be seeing it now, you know? I mean, I guess it kind of has to start with the Coinbases and companies that are wrapped around into Bitcoin and crypto, and then kind of spread into the other companies.
Yeah, and it's funny because Jamie Dimon at JPMorgan and Chase pretty much came out and said that because of what MicroStrategy is doing, this is going to cause a lot more risk, downside risk in the future. And I kind of laughed and I was like, I mean, actually, the more that MicroStrategy ends up having in their pocket, the less risky it's going to be because they're not selling. They don't want to sell for 100 years. So it's kind of crazy that he's saying that. It's just more FUD coming out of Chase, of course. But
yeah, I mean, more downside risk, also more upside potential. Like that's just kind of how things work. So yeah, if you only want to look at risk, then you can only, if you just talk about risk, then that's fine. But, you know, the MicroStrategy stock price was like $1,500 or something. You know, yeah, if you go from 400 to 1500, there's some downside risk, like, but you can't ignore the fact that you're up, that, you know, that the market cap of MicroStrategy's, you know, through the roof, and they're in like the 300s as far as the largest public company. So you can't ignore that. I mean, they would have never be there without Bitcoin.
Yeah. So the other interesting thing that I saw that was going on, MetaMask, which is probably one of the largest wallet providers of Ethereum, is working with MasterCard to create a on-chain credit card. And if this happens, it will be the first ever truly decentralized on-chain payment account. So it's kind of exciting to see. I think they're using like Banks, BANX, as one of the people to help with this. But I mean, if you really had a decentralized credit card, it's kind of intriguing to see how that works.
Yeah, I'd like to see more and more, you know, things actually work instead of people talking about what they're working on, like actually launch some stuff, and try it in the real world and like start making progress. I feel like the crypto world has been a lot of talk for a long time. Like, let's see some products.
Yeah. So Binance, some interesting news from them. Binance Labs, which was probably one of the top crypto VCs out there, is being spun out from underneath Binance so that there's no issues with them trying to promote some of the tokens that Binance Lab owns. So I think they're that like a $10 billion valuation. I think they have investments about 250 different crypto companies. So that's, I think, one of the big things that the new CEO, Richard Tseng, wanted to do. And that has finally happened as well.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, like Binance, if I had a successful thing, I would want my business separated from the Binance name. It's not, I don't know that Binance is terrible, but they seem to be a lightning rod. And if you could kind of separate a business, spin it off and kind of let it stand alone, you might have a shot at kind of shaking some of that reputation.
Yeah, I mean, they're still the biggest one out there, right? So they almost dwarf what Coinbase is doing today. So, and most people that have been in crypto for a while have probably used Binance at one point or another because they were the de facto standard, and now it's everybody's going after them, but they still do a good job of what they're doing, what their product is. And then the other big news.
That's fine. I've used Binance. I didn't have a problem with it. The only problems I've had is when they had to create Binance.us and kind of dumb things down for US users because of regulations. That's the biggest problem I've had with Binance.
Yeah. And that's not really their fault.
Yeah.
The other big news that hopefully this is finally over, Craig Wright, who's been declaring himself Satoshi Nakamoto forever, was finally deemed not Satoshi Nakamoto by courts in the UK. So HODLNOT, which is one of the original Bitcoin devs and very active on Twitter, I think was being sued by Craig Wright and spent, I think, more than $3 million and multiple years defending himself in court. And it finally came out that Craig Wright has been lying and making up stuff the entire time. And the hope now is that they actually do something about it and somehow penalize him for lying to the courts for this long and creating all this unnecessary work. So we'll see what actually happens with that.
Yeah, I'm happy for this whole storyline to just disappear. It's been annoying forever. Ever since I've been in it, it's been annoying. It sounded like the judge had like zero time. It didn't take long at all to deliberate and determine his thoughts on if Craig Wright was Satoshi or not. So let's go ahead and get this flushed out and kind of put it on the list of things that we don't need to deal with anymore.
Exactly. And I know it's not Bitcoin, but Solana has actually been making some news here lately. They finally crossed over the $200 mark, which is probably the highest they've been in a long time. I think their all-time high is like 260, but there's definitely a ton of people talking about it. What's interesting is they crossed over $200, but most of this is probably meme coin related because the net outflows were actually negative last week. So while Solana is getting a lot of attention, it's not because of actual stuff going on Solana. It's probably meme coin activity.
Yeah, I read something similar to that meme coins are driving a lot of this. But, meme coins, that's what seems to get into the news now. Like Bitcoin in 2017, Bitcoin was the thing. And the news articles and things like that were all about Bitcoin and the hype machine. And then the 2020, 2021 ramp up, I mean, Dogecoin and Shiba Inu and a bunch of meme coins that are just created for fun. That seemed to lead the charge in making like retail news splash. And so it seems like they're just kind of going back to that well.
Yeah, it's amazing that some of these meme coins have such a high value when they're pretty much worthless, where there's a ton of companies out there that are actually doing really cool things and have nowhere near that value. So my hope is that when people start to realize what some of these other companies can do, some of that money from meme coins will actually go into companies that are making a difference and not just kind of pointless.
Yeah, it just seems like maybe it's just not as much fun to gamble on that stuff. I mean, it's just people like to try to get 1,000x on a coin that has a stupid name. That seems to be more fun than doing any sort of research.
Yeah. And then one of the last things that I had was NFT related. We talked a while ago about Starbucks getting into the NFT space with their Odyssey program, and they are sunsetting this Odyssey program for now. It's all moving over to the Nifty Gateway platform. So, I mean, the NFTs, they don't go away. They're just not going to be focusing on them. They're planning their next foray into this space, but they're kind of done with kind of this test. So interesting to hear. I mean, I think we've talked about it, or I've talked about it. NFTs, I think, are here to stay. People just have to figure out how to use them, right? And kudos to Starbucks for trying. And it's probably still a little early since most people barely even know what crypto is in general, but it's exciting to see that they're still innovating.
Yeah, you got to try stuff. I mean, something's going to stick. And then once it sticks, people in adjacent areas will figure out ways to make it work. And I mean, if it's useful, it'll be useful. I mean, they'll find a way.
Anything else from your end that we missed?
No. I think that covers for my end. I mean, on the Bitcoin side, like it hasn't been like a lot of, a wide variety of topics. It's just been like price, ETF, predictions. And, that's been the majority of what I've seen. So I think we'll get something. And now that kind of the price has cooled off, so I bet they'll dig deeper for more news. But yeah, right now it's pretty much just good news and, watch price go up.
Yeah, we're about a month away from the halving, and typically there is some sort of retracement right before the halving anyway. So this is just par for the course for Bitcoin. And I mean, even in the bull runs, I think people need to get prepared. I think the last bull run, or after the last halving in that bull run, there were still close to a dozen retracements on Bitcoin during that, right? So it doesn't go up every single day for 12 to 18 months. It goes up and comes down and goes up and comes down.
Oh, yeah. And 20% retracements are no big deal for Bitcoin. But when you're at 70,000 and you retrace 20%, I mean, that's a $14,000 drop. So, you know, it's just kind of normal, buckle up and ride the wave.
Well, I mean, it's 40% retracements are even possible, right? So if people thought 20% is bad, crypto is different. There's a lot more. Now, we can argue that with the ETFs, maybe the 40% is probably not as likely to happen, but who knows, right?
Right.
Awesome. Well, as always, great catching up, and hopefully we'll see some exciting stuff from the Bitcoin price action in the next week or so.
Yeah, sounds good.
See ya.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.